point one. Saturday's a good day to sleep in, isn't it? Okay, open your Bibles to Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1. I'm not preaching out of that. I just want to see if it's in your version. Genesis chapter 1. Now, I talked to you last night about being blessed, and because I really believe most people desire to be blessed. I think there is something else that most people desire to be. Americans are chasing this with a vengeance. Most people desire to be happy. Again, I know very few people that say, boy, I hope I'm unhappy all my life. I think one of the problems with our society is everybody is so busy trying to be happy that they're not succeeding, and they're just getting in the dumps and depressed because they keep trying to be happy and they can't achieve it. If you are not happy, I'm going to tell you tonight how to be happy. And if you're not happy, I'm going to tell you why you're not happy. And get this, I'm going to tell you right now. I'm not going to preach for an hour and a half and then tell you. You know, I told you I'm a news junkie. Now, sometimes I'll get someplace where I'll see the news and I'll watch the news and I'll find out what's going on. And then other times I will go months, years, well, not years, but months without finding out what's going on. I mean, for all I know, Nixon may not be president anymore. But here's what drives me crazy. You watch the news, and it's going to be an hour news program, okay? And there's a particular story that I'm interested in. When the news program comes on, they show about 5 seconds of the story I want to know. I want to see. And they'll say, now we're going to tell you about this. I watch 15 minutes. They don't say a word about it. Just as they go to the commercial and I'm about to give up, they show me that 5 second blip again. They go, now we're going to tell you about this when we come back. That's a stinking lie. They go another 15 minutes. Don't tell me a word. Then when they go to the commercial, what do? They throw the bait out one more time. They do this every 15 minutes. I'm telling you, I am ready to make the news. Preacher goes down to television station and you know, shoots all the guys that are announcing the news. And so after an hour, then they give you like 2 seconds of it. And that drives me crazy. And that doesn't take a lot. So I'm going to tell you right now, if you're not happy, I'm going to tell you how to be happy. Okay, now that does not mean you leave early. But I'm going to tell you, if you are happy, first off, I want you to do this. I told you, think. I'm going to say that while I'm here because I told you, and everybody laughs when I say it. Everybody thinks I say it to be funny. It's not a joke. It is the absolute truth. Americans quit thinking the day after they got their TV sets. You don't have a brain anymore. You have a remote. You don't form an opinion. Instead, you watch a one-hour docudrama, and at the end of it you go, somebody needs to do something about that, and you actually credit yourself with the original thought. And it just didn't happen, okay? And so I'm going to tell you, first off, guys, it isn't money. For all you guys, even in this room, people say, oh, if I just had money, whoa. There are people in this world, you ready for this? Who are smarter than you. I know that's a brutal thing. Probably anybody above third grade. But there are people in this world who are smarter than you and have millions, not a million, have multi-millions of dollars, and they are not happy. Now, I know what you just said. Well, yeah, that's because they don't. Well, no, you're going to spend it right, huh? You're kidding yourself. So it's not money. It's not fame. It is not what you are chasing, okay? I am going to tell you what makes a person happy. You are happy when you do what you were put here to do. It's that simple. In other words, all of us were put here for a purpose. And when you achieve your purpose, when you fulfill your purpose, you are happy. Now, we are different. Men were put here for one reason. Women were put here for dishes, laundry, clean house, I'm trying to think. Anyway, men were put here for a reason. Women were put here for a reason. Kids are put here for a reason. So I'm going to talk to you in that order. I am going to talk to all of you about why you were put here. I'm going to talk to the men about why you're not happy and how to be happy. I guarantee it'll work. And then I'm going to talk to the women. Somehow Bible believers have gotten this rap that we're hard on women. And fact is, And you can time me. Nobody's ever done it. If they have, they've never come up and told me I was wrong. But I always spend more time talking to the men about what's wrong than the women. And I'm going to tell you why. I said this last night. And you guys, of course, you already knew it before I got here. Men are the head of the home.
Right?
Let me tell you what happened. A number of years ago, I was out in Norfolk, Virginia, preaching, and there was a sailor there, and we went up on his ship. His ship was the USS Eisenhower. At that time, I think it's been surpassed now, but at that time, it was the largest aircraft carrier in the world. He had just come back from a six-month cruise of the Mediterranean. He said, we didn't lose a plane, we didn't lose a sailor, we didn't have an accident. It was an absolute perfect cruise. And he said, as we're coming down the channel to dock, he said, 400 yards from our porting facility, as they cruised down this channel, there was a ship at anchor. It drifted out, and the bow of that ship raked the entire port side of the Eisenhower, did $2 million worth of damage. Now, let me ask you a question. Who got in trouble? The captain on the Eisenhower? The captain or the cook? Come on, the captain, right? Well, I got news for you men who are the head of the home. If you are the head of the home, then if there are problems in your marriage, it's probably the fault of the captain. Just makes sense to me. And I'll be honest with you, I am very, very prejudiced in this respect. If you told me there were 10 couples and they were all having marriage problems, never told me what the problems were. If you told me there were 10 couples having marriage problems, before I ever heard what the problems were, I would automatically figure that 9 out of those 10 times it is a man's fault. Because he's the head of the home. And if you're running the ship, guys, if it runs aground, don't blame the cook. So I will spend more time talking to the men than I will the ladies. And then the kids. Now, kids, look, sleep all you want. But tell your parents to wake you up when I get to your part. You are going to thank me for this. You are going to be so glad you came to church. And if you want to show your thanks, I can only tell you one way. M&M's. You'll figure that out. All right. Genesis chapter 1. Look at verse 26. It says this. And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all of the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. Let's bow our heads and talk to the Lord. Father, it just amazes me. I just love it, God, to think that you took dirt in your hands, formed it. It was dead dirt. It was lifeless dirt. And then you breathed your breath into it, and it became a living soul. That would be miraculous enough. And then you let your only begotten Son die for that dirt, and then made that dirt part of your family. And now when I say, Father, I am just so much dirt talking to my Creator, and yet He is still my Father. I am just amazed, God. I am blessed by what You have done. God, I pray now, Father, these folks, there's something they are usually doing on Friday night. They came to church instead. I hope You're blessed, God, by them being here. I hope, God, they'll be blessed because they came. I pray, God, that You will deliver the message. Please, God, if they don't hear from You tonight, it is going to be my fault. I don't want to be the reason they don't hear from You. So, God, get Sam Gipp out of Your way and out of their way. Speak to the heart of each individual, God. Accomplish Your purpose in each life. In Jesus Christ's name we pray. Amen. Now, I hate to do this. It's very embarrassing to have to stand before you tonight as an evangelist and tell you that I've been violating Scripture. But I have. I mean, if you have, you ought to admit it. Says here, and God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness, let them have dominion over the fish of the sea. I violate that scripture every time I go fishing. I do not have dominion over the fish of the sea. I don't have dominion over the fish of the creek. I don't have dominion over the fish of the lake or the river. No fish whatsoever. Okay? I am not a fishman. I fish one day a year. Every June, I have a meeting. And I'm in it with Evangelist David or Dennis Coral, and we go fishing one day a year, okay? Now, if you ever go fishing with Dennis Coral, let me explain. Wear hiking boots. You are going to go where it's kind of like Star Trek fishing. You're going to go where no man's ever gone before. I never knew that fence climbing was a part of fishing. But when you go with Dennis Corll, it's not fence climbing. It's fence climbing, fence climbing, fence climbing, fence climbing. I knew we were in trouble when Canadian border guards turned us back. This really happened. We're fishing in this little creek, and this guy walks up behind us and says, "Excuse me." And I said, "We said yeah." And he said, "You guys do realize you're on private property?" And I looked. We're standing in his backyard. I said, "Well, the swing set was kind of a giveaway." I said, "Hey, Dennis, look what they built since we've been standing here." He goes, and then the guy asked the question of life. He said, "Don't you guys remember climbing a fence?" I said, "Climb a fence?" I said, "Bud, we have climbed so many fences, I don't know if we're in or out." Well, when you go fish with Dennis Corll, you just say odd, even, odd, even, odd, even, or in, out, in, out, in, out. I mean, it's just I'm not a fisherman, okay? I'm not an animal rights person at all, but to be very honest, I apologize to the worms and I'm putting them on the hook. I think he wants out. And I think he's going to get out. Anyway, I don't care that the worm is going to die. I just feel bad that it's going to die for nothing. Last time we went to buy bait, and the guy asked Dennis, he says, "What do you want?" He said, "Night crawlers." And then this guy asked a question. I've never heard this question asked. He says, "Do you want night crawlers or do you want baby night crawlers?" And I almost said, "Dennis, not babies." I mean, I don't want to be a worm abortionist. It's bad enough it's worm murder, but it's going to be worm abortion. And I told him, I said, "I figured it out, though. I figured it out. We're going to be going fishing this June, and I am going to catch something. I finally figured it out." I said, "This year, I light the bait." But you have figured that one out. But I'm just not a fisherman. Now, look what it says. "Let us make man in our image, let him have dominion over the fish of the sea." I don't do that. "And over the fowl of the air and over the cattle." I make up for it right there. Okay? In fact, I may as well tell you this since you're going to hear about it. I want you to hear it from me first. I am getting a tattoo. I am getting a tattoo. I don't want you to hear it. "You're going to get a tattoo?" Say, "Yeah, he told us you're going to." I'll tell you when the idea came to me. I saw this guy, and he had around his arm, he had this barbed wire tattooed. I preach out west, and I preach to those ranchers, and I thought, they use barbed wire to keep cattle in. I said, "I'm getting a three-strander tattooed right across here. Just try to keep all those wayward cattle in." Anyway, but I want you to notice, here is what man was made to do. Look at verse 26. It says, let us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them have dominion. Man was made to have dominion. You know, I am not going to complain to you ladies, but there is a move to turn every man in America into a woman. You know, no competition, no grades, no awards, you know. Hey, I got news for you. So, well, you know, it's you men. You're always competing. You're absolutely right. You are absolutely right. You know why? Because we were made to have dominion. It is in a man to want to succeed and beat the other guy. And I'm going to tell you, I don't care what it is. You go down to the feed mill and you'll find two farmers. One of them will show up and they'll be buying feed at the same time. One of them will look over at the other and go, "I bet my John Deere will outpull your Massey." You know why? Because man was made to have dominion. If you are a man here and you are not happy, it may be because you are not having dominion. There are some areas to have dominion in. First off, man was made to explore. The whole world looked up at the moon and said, "Gee, I wonder if it's made out of green cheese." You know what some man said? "I don't know. Let's go up and find out." Tell you what we'll do. We'll take a dune buggy with us and play a round of golf. I mean, it is in a man to explore. A number of years ago, back in the days of the West, there was a cowboy, young cowboy. He was riding the prairie. In New Mexico, southeast corner of New Mexico, he saw out on the horizon a column of black smoke ascending up into the sky. And he knew, brother, somebody's in trouble. Well, you know, in those days, you didn't let somebody be in trouble without doing something to help. So he rode toward that smoke. He wanted to find out if there's something he could do to help him. Well, when he got to the source of this black column going into the sky, you know what he found out? It was not smoke. It was a column of bats. I mean, for literally hours, they were coming out of a cave opening. And so he stood there until the last bat went out, and then he went down into that cave and began to explore. That young cowboy, his name was James White, Jim White, believe it or not, and that young cowboy had now discovered what we now know as Carlsbad Caverns. He spent the next 23 years of his life exploring Carlsbad Caverns. He shinnied into little pockets. He got in little places like that, probably got stuck a few times, pulled himself out. You say, why did he go down in there and just explore? Because it's in a man to explore. If you've ever done this, you ever go to any kind of a cave tour, don't they do this to you? They get you underground and then turn lights out. And then they turn lights on, your wallet's gone, your watch is gone, your wife is gone. But our guide told us this. We went down. Hey, look, if you ever go, to New Mexico, go to Carlsbad Caverns. I'm telling you, you need to go there. There are two reasons why you want to go there. When you go on this tour, and when you finish this tour, you are 750 feet underground. You are in an area, a cavern, that you could take your entire church property and put it on there. That is how big it is under there. Second reason why you should go, when you get down there 750 feet underground, there's a burger place. Now, that's America, buddy. I mean, you know, drive-in doesn't do well, but it's a pretty good burger place. But here's what happened. Our guide told us, they said one time, Jim White, the cowboy, was 4 hours underground and his lantern went out. Now, guys, if I was 4 hours underground and you were standing at the mouth of the cave and my lantern went out, you could still hear my scream. You would find out that 4 hours underground is not far enough underground. I'm telling you what. I tell people this. You know, you ought to learn something new about yourself all the time. I was in New Guinea last year. I'm standing in the bathroom shaving, and I saw something move out of the corner of my eye. That's not a good thing. And I looked over, and I'm telling you, there was a spider on the wall. It had legs like pipe cleaners. And you say, well, just watch where it goes and don't go anywhere near there. It went behind the commode. You got to have an awful lot of self-control to not go anywhere near that. And so, but I tell people I learned two things about myself that day. I didn't know that I could hit a note that high and hold it that long. Anyway, but you know what I'm telling you? It is in a man to explore. A man wants to do this. I always blow it. I always preach this sermon and then mess up my opportunity. I have in the coach out there, I have a pen that is going to put me out of the ministry. But I'm going to go out smiling. It is an electric shocker pen. It's wonderful. I'll put it in my pocket and I'll go, preacher, could you give me your phone number? And he'll go, sure, you know. It's rough on my love offerings, but it's great. You know, it's just great. And you know, and kids are funny. They'll want to do it. And a kid, they think they broke it, so they won't tell you. They'll just kill themselves. They'll go, I said, kid, please. You know, I don't want your parents to sue me. But, and I don't give it to ladies, okay? I don't say, hey, lady, try this. I've met a couple. Stand in the water. But, but you know what? Listen, only men will take that pen after they've been electrocuted by it and go, hey, let me see that. How does that work? You say, why? Because it's in a man to explore. A man wants to find out how it works, why it works, how I can make it work better. That is in a man. Maybe you are not happy because you are not exploring. You are not literally adding something to your brain and you're not using your head. Tell you what else it's in a man to do. It's in a man to build. Every young man in this room wants to build something. I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's nothing but a birdhouse. Every man wants to build something. You've all seen pictures, I'm sure, of the Golden Gate Bridge out there in San Francisco. We've been across that several times. The amazing thing about the Golden Gate Bridge, two things about it. Number one, when they started building that bridge, they built it from both sides to the center. The second thing that was amazing about it was that when they built it, the guy that designed it, before they ever started building the construction, he told them, now you understand, as they build it to the center, at some point, the two halves, which are basically two independent freestanding docks, are going to line up, then they're going to bolt it together. It's going to become a bridge. He told them exactly what time of day they were going to set those bolts to make that a bridge. He said they will set those bolts at 1:30 in the afternoon exactly. You say, you mean he knew that as they worked on that bridge that they would get done working on it at 1:30 in the afternoon? No. No, not at all. You know what he knew? He knew that as they built those two halves of that bridge, those bolt holes wouldn't even line up. But as it sat in the hot California sun, that steel would begin to heat and expand. And as those two bridge halves expanded, they would move closer and closer. And it would be 1:30 in the afternoon before that bridge was hot enough for those bolts to line up, those holes to line up. And at 1:30 in the afternoon, pop, 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 all the way across that bridge, they set those bolts. I'm sorry, ladies, that doesn't do anything for you. I can't help it. But I'm telling you, the guys, we think it's great. You say, why? Because it is in a man to build. A man wants to build something. You know, I come in a lot of churches, and sometimes the pulpit has been built by a man in the church. I can always tell if the pulpit has been built by a man in the church. You know how? Because right after I'm done preaching, he comes up and tells me. I mean, every time, this guy will be standing right there. He'll be standing, when I get done preaching, the guy standing right there with a big grin, I know he's going to tell me. He'll go, I'll build that pulpit. He said, oh, he's so proud. You're right. You're right. Because a man wants to build something. A man wants to build something. He wants to take a pile of lumber and walk away. And where the pile of lumber was, he wants a house standing or a garage. A man is made to have dominion, and a man was made to build. And that's what, if you're not happy, it's because you are not building anything. I'll tell you what else a man was made to do as far as having dominion. A man was made to conquer. Now, again, this effeminate spirit that permeates our society, this bunch of women gone, well, you know, if it wasn't for you men, we wouldn't have wars. You're right. Cat fights. Fur balls. Oh, nice dress. Too bad they didn't have it your size. Hey, look, I'm sorry, ladies, but we're here now. And the wars came with us. Can I tell you something? We'll fight the wars. You don't have to send your daughter over to Iraq. I don't like seeing women dressed up as soldiers and getting shot at. That is not their job, all right? We'll go over there. We'll die for it, because I'm going to tell you, as long as there are people on this earth, somebody's going to step onto your property and try to make it theirs. We will take care of that. We will go out there and we will bash their head, and we'll make them never want to do that again. We did that a couple of times. The Germans and the Japanese learned a lesson, didn't they? People, man was made to conquer. You know what a lot of people do not know? That in February 1945, when the Marines landed on Iwo Jima, there were no Japanese soldiers on that island. That island is about 6 or 7 miles long. It's shaped like a pork chop. At the bottom of it, the southern end, is Mount Suribachi. That is an extinct volcano. And it took the Marines 3 months to conquer that island, but there were no Japanese on it. They were under it. The Japanese in that little island had 30 miles, I believe, of underground tunnels. You could go down at the north end of that island, go all the way to the south end of that island, never see sunlight. Inside Mount Suribachi, in that extinct volcano, there was a 7-story headquarters with electric lights and plumbing. Many times, here's what happened. A Marine would see one of his fellow Marines get shot right beside him and look up and couldn't even see the guy that shot him, because they'd take a shot. They didn't go down into a little foxhole. They went down into a trap door and they took a tunnel that took them all the way across the island. And if you've ever done this, you know, you ever run up a pile of grain, you know, you go up 3 steps and slide back 2. Well, that was the soil of Mount Suribachi. Mount Suribachi being a volcano, the soil of Iwo Jima was all black volcanic sand. And these Marines, they'd be trying to get up those beachheads, and they'd be trying to climb up there and literally sliding back down while some guy pops them and then disappears. Very frustrating. They still went on. They still took the island. And when they were at the very foot of Mount Suribachi, they had pretty much taken the whole island. And now all they had to do was take Mount Suribachi. Inside that Japanese headquarters was a Japanese major. Now, you know, the Japanese are big on this go out, you know, with a blaze of glory, which I think is great. I really do. And so this Japanese major grabbed his samurai sword, came out of that headquarters, and went running down Mount Suribachi to attack these Marines. Now, every man here knows the great truth. Don't bring a sword to a gunfight. I don't care. You can hoo-ha-ha, because, I mean, it only takes one time. And there was a Marine sergeant that saw this major come running down toward his men. You know what this guy was? This Japanese soldier was the first complete enemy soldier he'd seen in the 3 months he'd been on that island. He'd had men killed right beside him and had never been able to see who had done it. And now for the first time he sees a Japanese soldier coming at him with a samurai sword in his hand. All he had to do was stand up, squeeze the trigger one time and end his life. He didn't do that. They said he stood up, he took aim, then he thought about it. He threw his rifle down, ran up there barehanded, grabbed the sword in his bare hand, took it away from him, killed him with it, and took it home as a souvenir. And I know, you ladies are going, and you guys are going, yeah. You say, why? Because man was made to conquer. And before you condemn us for that, you don't think it's so bad when he conquers polio. You don't think it's so bad when he conquers smallpox. You don't think it's so bad when man decides, I'm going to eliminate that disease, or I'm going to eliminate that disease, or I'm going to take care of that problem. And so man was made to conquer. And maybe you men are not happy because you are not conquering anything. Now, there's another reason. I want you to look at chapter 2, Genesis chapter 2. Now, I'm going to ask you men a Bible question. It's not a tough one. And even if you went to public school, you'll probably get this answer right. In your Bible, does Genesis chapter 2 come before Genesis chapter 3? Okay, I thought so. Well, I'll tell you why. It's because I hear men say something sometimes, and it really bothers me. It kind of makes me mad. Take a look at chapter 2, verse 5. It says, every plant of the field before it was in the earth, and every herb of the field before it grew, for the Lord God had not caused it to rain upon the earth, and there was not a man to till the ground. Look at verse 15. And the Lord God took the man and put him into the Garden of Eden to dress it and to keep it. Man was made to work. Reason I pointed out that chapter 2 came before chapter 3. Chapter 3 is where the fall is. Chapter 3 is where the curse is. And I've heard men say this, well, I got to go to work. You know, part of the curse. Hey guys, work ain't part of the curse. You know, we used to say that, but buddy, I go into communities and they're closing down factory after factory, business after business. I mean, you understand, guys, that before long we're going to be nothing but Starbucks and lawn service. And when they shut down your factory and you lose 800 jobs and you get a job, you know what you're going to say? It's a blessing to be able to work. Man was made to work. Now listen very carefully, men, because there is a truth that every man that has a job here knows. You know what it is? Every man here who has a job knows how to get paid for not working. We all know how to maybe cut 15 minutes here and maybe 20 minutes there and get paid for time that we produced nothing for our employer. We can all do that. And I'm going to tell you, you can do that until you die, till you retire, until Jesus comes back. You can do that and never get caught and never lose your job. And you can chuckle under your breath about how your boss paid you for time that you were twiddling your thumbs or doing something, working on your own project. You can do that. But I'll tell you what you can't do. You can't do that and be happy. Because you know if you're cheating the guy you work for. And when you're cheating the guy you work for, you can laugh about it, you can brag about it, but you will not be happy. If you want to be happy, I'm going to tell you something, guys. Look, I am not one of these people who think you got to sell your soul to your boss. I am not one of these guys who think you got to be some kind of a robot for your company, that you got to sell your soul to them or be an automaton. But if you want to be happy, tell you what you do. You finish every pay week or 2 weeks, whatever it is, having put in about a half an hour of time or more that you didn't get paid for. And you'll pillow your head at night. You may say they don't like me there, but I'll know I treated them right. You'll be happy. Man was made to work. You're in the same kind of an area where I'm from. I'm from Madison, Ohio. I was raised 3 blocks from 5 steel mills. I know some people talk about how quiet it is at night. I love the quiet at night. You know what I like? I like the sound of steel mill. In our house, my bedroom was on the back of the house. It faced those steel mills. I could see those steel mills. I could see the lights. And I'd go down on summer nights. At the foot of my bed was a window, and I'd open up that window, and I'd lay at the opposite end of the bed. And I'd just look out that window, man. I'll tell you what I'd do. For me, my lullaby was the sound of a steel mill. I'd hear horns. I'd hear the sound of engines as their yard engines are powering up to pull something. I'd hear cranes. I'd hear steel clanging on concrete as it was dropped. I mean, I heard everything there was, brother. I loved it. My dad worked 43 years at Republic Steel. My dad, tell you how he got the job. He said one time, he's a very young man, and he said, it was in the Depression, and he said he saw a chain link fence, and on the other side of that chain link fence were a bunch of men digging a ditch. He said, I saw a shovel leaning against the fence. He said, I went through the gate, picked up the shovel, I started digging the ditch. He said, within 30 minutes, some guy came by the clipboard, took all of our names, and I was now employed by Republic Steel. 43 years later, he retired as the foreman over the 3rd Enduro. My dad worked. My dad was a worker. Brother, I'll tell you what. I learned to work from my father, and my dad would work. But my dad said this. He said, son, he said, steelwork is hot, and it is hard, and it is dangerous. And he said, I don't want you to ever try to even get a job in the steel mill. And he probably was afraid they'd find out it was his son. So I never got a job in the steel mill, but a good friend of mine got a job in Republic Steel, of all things. And so, you know, when you first get a job, it's three shifts, and they always put you in midnights, man, you know. And so they put my friend Terry, his first night, on a midnight shift. And I saw him the next day, and I said, Terry, I'm waiting for the horror story. How was it? How was your first night at the steel mill? He started laughing. He said, Sam, he said, I put in 8 hours last night. He said, 4 of those hours I spent sleeping up on a wood pile. I said, Terry, what would you have done if you got caught by your foreman or your supervisor? He started laughing again. He said, Sam, I slept between my foreman and my supervisor. You know what he had done? Hey, who here wouldn't like to effectively double your hourly wage? He had put in 8 hours, but only worked 4. He effectively doubled. Hey, he got paid for 4 hours of sleep. You want a challenge? I'll give you a little challenge. Go to Massillon, Ohio tonight. Go to 633 Neal Avenue on the southwest side of town. Go upstairs to the back bedroom. Open up that window and listen as carefully as you can. It's as quiet as farm country. Not one, not two, not three. 5 steel mills are no longer there. You know why they are no longer there? They are no longer there because men got paid for not working. Now, I'll tell you something, guys. If you want to be happy, work. Calluses will make you happy. Going home so tired that you just lay right down and go to sleep, that will make you happy. And cheating your boss will not make you happy. You think it'll make you rich? Maybe it will. But you will be rich, but you will not be happy, and you'll find out that money is not where it's at. I lived in Cincinnati, Ohio for a while. In that Cincinnati area, General Motors had an assembly plant. And they built the Firebirds and Camaros in that plant. And when they changed to the next generation of Firebird and Camaro, they said, we're going to build this in another plant, and we're going to shut this one down. We're just going to. In fact, I was there not long ago. Where that plant was is now, it's like a strip mall. I mean, they just tore the thing down. And they said, you got 2 years, and then we're shutting this place down. When that announcement hit that General Motors factory, you know what they had to do 30 days later? They had to lay off 175 men. You know why? Because now that they knew they only had 2 years to work, all the men showed up. They found out that they had hired 175 guys just to cover for a bunch of deadwood, that guys that thought they'd take their sick day off, or their personal day off, or their birthday off, or just didn't feel like going in because they thought the union would keep their job for them. And 175 guys, multiply that by every factory in the country. You think it only happened in one plant? You say, what was the problem? It's gone now. Because men didn't work. If you men are unhappy, maybe you're unhappy because you're not working. I'll give you another one. Look at Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5. Now, this is the book, right? This is God's book, correct? And we believe this book, right? Right, both of you. Okay. Look what it says in verse 22, ladies. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let wives be to their own husbands in everything. Ladies, don't get mad at me. I did not put that in there. Okay? I have women. You know, we knock women's lib, but boy, the Spirit's in our churches. And I've had women come up and get mad at me for that. I didn't put that in there. I didn't write the Bible. Had I written the Bible, I would have put that in there. There'd be something in there about chocolate chip cookies, I'll guarantee you, if I wrote the Bible. But can I tell you guys something? Listen carefully, man. God never told you you were the head of the home. I didn't say you're not the head of the home. Every man here is the head of the home. I said God never told a man he was the head of the home. He told the woman that the man was the head of the home. He told the woman that the man was the head. You know why I didn't tell the man? Because when a man finds out he's head of the home, 5 seconds after he finds out, everybody knows. I mean, Jeremy, I'm head of the home. Hey, I'm head of the home. Did you know I'm head of the home? Woman, where's my coffee? I mean, when a man finds out he's the head of the home, the whole world has to find out. God didn't tell the man he was the head of the home. He told the woman. You know why? Because it is her lot in life to have to be in subjection to him. I've heard it said this. Well, God told women that the man was head of the home because women have trouble with being in subjection. That is not true. We all have trouble being in subjection. Come on, you guys, you men. Tell me that you've never had any kind of a problem with your orders that your boss gave you. You guys that were in the military, I'll bet you thought that every order you ever got was just the smartest thing you'd ever heard, correct? No, you know what the difference was? On the way home, you could tell your boss how stupid he was because he wasn't in the car. I mean, you had to submit yourself for 8 hours a day or for 3 or 4 years, and then you were done. Your wife is stuck with you 24/7, bucko, and you're the guy that invested your life savings in Enron. What I'm telling you tonight is that a woman has to be in subjection to her husband. That is her lot in life. So God told the woman to be in subjection to the man. What did he tell the man? He didn't tell the men they're head of the home. Look what he told the men. Look at verse 25. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. You men were told to love your wives. Men were made to love their wives. Now, ladies, don't walk out on me. Don't walk out on me. Let me finish this. Women say some stupid things. Okay? Don't leave. Hang on. Men also say some stupid things. On both cases, I think it starts with I do. But anyway, and let me say this. I do not believe that women say things that are more stupid than men. And I don't believe that men say things that are more stupid than women. You know what the difference is between men and women saying something stupid? When a woman says something stupid, it's usually obvious, and everybody just gets a laugh. I mean, a woman will say something stupid, and then she'll go, oh, I can't believe I said that. And everybody's going, yeah. When a man says something stupid, he thinks it's oracle. He thinks it ought to be etched in granite and memorized by children. I mean, a man can say something stupid and puff his chest out like, huh, what do you think of that? You don't want to know what we think of that. We think you shouldn't be allowed to use a fork and a knife when you eat. That's what we think of that. Here's what happens. You know, if there's young married couples in here, please listen very carefully. I told you last night, don't call each other names. Don't call each other names. Not unless they're good ones. But here's what a lot of young married couples do. They get married and they begin a journey. And that journey is this. They begin about a 20 to 25 year project. From the day they get married, they begin to work at destroying their marriage. That process takes 20 to 25 years. Bad marriages break up in 4 or 5 years. Good ones break up in 20 to 25. Have you ever heard that? Oh, I can't believe it. They're married 30 years. What happened? I'll tell you what happened. They worked for 30 years to destroy that marriage, and after 30 years, they finally succeeded. You know what some of you are going to do? You're going to work for 25 years to destroy your marriage. Then you're going to come into your pastor's office, and you're going to think that in 25 minutes he can fix what you took 25 years to destroy. You're out of your mind. You think, what, he's got some kind of a magic wand in a drawer. He's going to pull this out, wave it over the two of you, and all of a sudden your husband's going to look at you and go, hey, baby. And she's going to go, what a hunk. It's not going to happen. And here's the amazing thing. Here is the amazing thing. I told you, 10 couples, and I believe this. I believe if 10 couples have problems, now I could be wrong, but I automatically assign the blame in that 9 out of 10 of those are going to be a man's fault. Not 10 out of 10. Really, sometimes it is a woman. I don't think you should beat your wife. I've seen some women that make me give it a try. Not that I think it would change her, but at least she'd have a reason for acting that way. But you get this couple in here, and usually it's the woman, I can't take anymore. That's what she says. You ask her, what is it you can't take anymore? You know what she says? He never says he loves me. You know, there are men who think that that's unreasonable. Guys, she's not asking for a new Buick. Okay? She just wants to hear you say, I love you. Now, when the woman says, he never says he loves me, here's where the man says, stupid thing number one. He thinks this is going to shut everybody up. He says this. Huh? I told you 25 years ago we got married, I loved you. I mean, if it changes, I'll let you know. Well, you got to admit, that is pretty stupid. I've had a guy say this. I've had guys say this. I don't need to hear it every day. Why does she? Because she's not like you, thank God. You know this guy that builds the pulpit in the church? The guy that stands down here, waits for me to get done preaching and says, I built that pulpit. When a man tells me, I built that pulpit, I know the next sentence out of his mouth. I automatically know the next thing he's going to say every single time. The guy will be standing right down here. I'll get done. He'll go, I built that pulpit. Then he'll say this. Next time, I'd do it this way. And there's something different. He'd put a shelf here. He'd put a shelf there. He would do something different, use a different kind of wood. And then he'll build that second one all the time. You know why? Come on, man. Isn't this true? Any man that's ever built anything did a better job second time. I don't care if it's a birdhouse, the second time you said, let's drill a hole in it. These birds are killing themselves trying to get in there. Painting a black circle didn't do the trick. I mean, it was fun. But the fact is that anybody that has built anything did a better job the second time. Isn't that right? Hey, you know what I believe? I believe what you believe. Come on, don't you all believe that God made man? First? Well, come on. I mean, picture it. Here's God. I'm sorry, ladies. I know we look this way, but we were made out of dirt. Takes this dirt, breathes in his nostrils the breath of life, and goes, ooh. I can do better than this. And he did. Second time around, he made women. Was that a good idea? Guys, didn't God bless the world when he made women? Ladies, when I say that you are God's gift to the world, I'm not talking about being a piece of property. I mean that when God made women, he added something to the world that the world would be a terrible place if you weren't here. I say it this way, men are the wheat and the oats and the barley of life. You need those to live. Women are the flowers. I have never yet come into a church where they had a centerpiece in front of the pulpit that was wheat and oats and barley. It's always flowers. I mean, aren't they something else? God made those. You know what men are? Men are the call to war. Women are the song of the birds. I look at it this way, ladies. You are the civilizing effect on us. If there were no women in the world would be one big locker room. There would be no deodorant factories, no toothpaste factories. Green teeth would be the norm. Uncombed hair. Unironed shirts. It would be a horrible place to live. Okay, it'd be kind of like a college dorm. And God made women. Listen, ladies, you are a blessing. You are a wonderful thing that God made. And it was a blessing to the entire world that God made you. Here's my problem. You know what my problem is? My problem with you ladies is that when God made you so special, why do you want to look like me? Why do you want my haircut? Why do you want to wear my clothes? And why do you think you're a success if you're driving the grader for the road paving company? Don't you ladies understand that if you ever succeed at being a man, there's going to be nobody to be a woman? Trust me, the guys that are trying it, it ain't working. God made a man to love his wife. You know what's wrong with some of you guys? Some of you guys aren't happy because you don't love your wife. You need to tell your wife you love her. You want to see a big, fullback, iron pumping, beat anybody into the ground man squirm? Put him on the phone to his wife in a room with about six other men just as they're saying goodbye. Oh, man, you talk about crawl. They'll be talking on the phone, you know, yeah, huh? And she'll go, okay, honey, bye. I love you. And he'll go, me too. Are you sorry, gutless thing? You ought to be able to tell your wife you love her. I don't care if anybody mocks you about it. I don't care if anybody laughs about it. I don't care if anybody, if they got marriage problems, let them have marriage problems. But I'm telling you guys, you need to love your wife. You know what bothers me about men? You men, there was a time when you were dating your wife. When you dated your wife, you dressed nice for her. You combed your hair. You brushed your teeth. They may have been green, but they were light green. You put stuff on there to make you smell good. You opened the car door for her. You took her out to a restaurant and bought her a meal and tried to show her a good time. And as soon as you changed her last name to yours, you stopped doing that. Were you lying to her? Were you deceiving her? Were you fooling her into thinking, when I get married, this is what life will be like? And as soon as you got her name to your name, you said, okay, got what I wanted, don't have to do that anymore. I'm going to tell you something. I love, two things I love to do with my wife. I love to walk down the street holding her hand. I just like to do it. I like to hold her hand, just like to go walking down the street. You know what else I like to do with my wife? I love to take my wife out to eat. I just like to sit across the table from her, watch her eat. Maybe you could use the silverware. I know, but it's spaghetti. Well, okay, could you at least just use one hand? But I do, man, I do. A while back, I had to fly off, and my wife and I, day before I flew off, we were sitting in a restaurant having lunch. You know what we're talking about? Tomorrow, where we're going to eat. You say, why? I mean, I just love being with my wife. You know what's wrong with you guys? You won't tell your wife you love her. I know you don't need to hear it. That's because you don't need to hear it. She does. And there's nothing wrong with telling your wife you love her. I still date my wife. When I was pastor of a church, I'd be in my office at church. I would call my wife up and I'd say, hey, you want to go out on a date? You know what she'd say? I'm a married woman. So I start asking single ones out. But I will tell you, you know, I don't have a complaint. I don't have a complaint about my wife. I have a problem with married couples that badmouth their spouse to their friends. I have a problem with men who get with the guys and go, my own lady, I'm telling you. That's wrong. I have a problem with ladies get together over coffee and say, I'm telling you, that man, no. You should be so loyal that if you have something negative that you know about your spouse, you ought to make it your death secret. Take it to the grave. You shouldn't care about anybody so much you would tell them about some flaw in your spouse. I said that to say this. There's no flaws in my wife. There aren't. I have nothing. I have no complaint. I mean, I will stand before God. In fact, sometimes I don't even wait. Sometimes I just get down on my knees and I say, God, what you meant a woman to be, my wife is. But I did have one issue with her for a number of years until I got her trained. Now, my wife is always nice to people, and she goes out and buys preachers' kids' birthday presents and buys missionary wives' stuff and all kinds of stuff, and she never gets to buy herself anything. And so finally, I trained her, and she has a standing order, and she'll tell you this. If she goes out shopping, I said, standing order, if you find something that my wife likes, buy it for her. You guys, your wife got, if your wife came home and said, I bought a dress today, you go, what'd you do that for? Wait a minute, I thought you loved her. Why wouldn't you be glad she did that? Well, she's spending me into the poorhouse. What you mean is you can't buy your fifth shotgun. Come on, I mean, how many can you shoot at one time? You ought to take care of your wife. Take her out to eat. Guys, buy her flowers. Now, ladies, could you help me on this? Don't go to your husband and go, I don't like flowers. Shut up. Buy her poison ivy then. I'm trying to help you. And I always get some abrasive old mud wrestler who says, I don't want no flowers. Well, then throw her 5 pounds of raw hamburger. But for the rest of you civilized world, buy her flowers. I'm not much interested in going and getting groceries or grocery stores, but there is one part of the grocery store that I like. They all have a flower section when you first go in. I go and buy my wife flowers. No, not for her anniversary. Yeah, I mean, I buy them for her anniversary and I buy them for her birthday. But I just go in and buy them. I just go in and buy her flowers. I never get my wife flowers. I don't come out of that store angry. Every single time. You know why? Because as I'm checking out, the lady doing the cash register thinks that we've had a fight. And I'm buying flowers to make up. Which makes me wonder why some of you guys buy flowers. I was buying flowers for my wife one time. This lady goes, somebody's in trouble. I said, I am not. I'm sorry, that book says I'm not supposed to let my good be evil spoken of. I was buying flowers for my wife one time. And this lady goes, what did you do? I said, lady, I married the greatest woman in the world. And these flowers are the least of what she deserves. That's all she's going to get. But it's the least of what she deserves. She's at least going to get the least. You know what happened if some of you guys... Hey, guys, look, if you buy her flowers, you'll find out she'll be glad for a $9 dozen. It doesn't have to be $70 dozen roses. She'll be glad what you bring her from the grocery store. Don't not a head of lettuce, okay? but bring her flowers. And I'll tell you what would happen. If some of you men would just go and buy flowers, just on any specific day, nothing special, just walk in the store, buy her flowers, come home and give your wife, honey, I bought these for you. You know what she'd say? Your wife would go, you remembered. You go, yeah. Oh, you didn't think I'd forget, did you? And while she's putting them in a vase, she'd be on the phone talking to the kids going, hey, what's today? I remembered something today. What did I remember? You know what's wrong with some of you men? You won't love your wife. I would rather be with my wife than anybody on earth. I love my boys. I really do. We got 3 boys. We get along famously. I'd rather be with my wife than my sons. I would rather be with my wife than my preacher friends. I would rather be with my wife than eat. That's a tough one. But I'm telling you, what's wrong with some of you men is you don't love your wife. You know what some of you guys need to do after church? Take your wife out for a burger. Take her out. Ooh, this is going to be hard. Take her out where she wants to go. I was overseas in Australia, and I called her and my wife. This was tough. You talk about, there's no doubt to my love. I said, babe, when I come home, I said, we're going to go out where you want to go, even if it's Panera bread. What are you getting excited about a bread place? Come on, man. I mean, put a dead animal between 2 pieces of bread. It's exciting. You know what? My wife's a good lady. I told you, I like cars. And I got this one meeting every January up in Detroit. That this has got nothing to do with me. From before the foundation of the world, it was predestined that I would have that meeting the very same week of the North American International Auto Show. So I finish up that meeting on Sunday. Monday morning, we check out of our hotel, and we go by the auto show. Now, my wife, you know what she says? Oh, car. 4 wheels, car. Oh, that's a nice car. Oh, is that a car? So, honey, no, that's a pop machine. but you know, she didn't understand a lot of that stuff. Well, we saw this one time. Well, we saw this guy. He had a great big Ford Excursion. I mean, it's like a $40,000 truck, and the guy had an American flag painted on, and it was the whole front was a flowing field of blue with stars in it, and the red and white stripes were cascading across the back of this thing. And my wife saw this, and she goes, "Oh, that's cute." I said, "Oh, babe." I said, "Don't say cute." I said, "This guy probably paid $20,000 for it." I said, "Walk up to him and say, 'Oh, your truck is cute.' They'll find him hanging in the garage." Say, "Whoa, that looks good, pal." You know. So my wife doesn't understand. But you know what my wife does? She'll go to them car shows with me. She'll go to a car museum, muscle car museum or something. She'll just stand there. I'm drooling on a fender. She didn't understand that. She's there because she loves me. For that reason, you know what I've done? This is a tough one. Men, you are looking at a man who has been to the National Doll Museum. That's a hard one. I mean, you say, why'd you go to the doll museum? Because she goes to the car museum. She didn't say, I go to the car museum, you got to go to the doll museum. She's not like that. I'm telling you, I have no complaint. I said, hey, you go to the car museum with me, so you go to the doll museum, and I'll just sit out in the parking lot and blow the horn. But, and I mean, man, guys, you know what it's like? I mean, you're going, oh, look, a doll. Say, why'd you do that? Because I love my wife. I love my wife. Guys, what I'm telling you tonight, some of you are not happy. I do not understand if you're going to live with somebody the rest of your life, why you wouldn't do something to try to make that relationship the best one on earth. You need a good relationship with your wife more than you need one with your boss, with your students, with your teacher, with your friends. You need a good relationship with your wife. She is the most important human on this earth. And some of you aren't happy because you don't love your wife. Now I'm done with the men. I'll talk to the ladies. Go back to Genesis chapter 2. Genesis chapter 2. And I'll show you why God put women on this earth. And I'm sure in the original Hebrew it said something about chocolate chip cookies here, but the translation didn't come across right. Here's what it says, Genesis chapter 2. Verse 20. And Adam gave names to all cattle, and to the fowl of the air, and every beast of the field. But for Adam there was not found an help meet for him. You know what God put women on the earth for? To help their husbands. I've heard people say, well, you know, it's to multiply and replenish the earth. Whoa, whoa, whoa. No, that's later. God put a woman here to help her husband. Lady, you were put here to help your husband. And God, hey, if you've been married to him very long, you know how badly he needs the help. I mean, I've seen guys, they couldn't find their feet if you gave them a road map and a flashlight. You put them in a phone booth, they couldn't find their way out and couldn't remember the number for 911 to call for help. I'm telling you tonight that a woman, I didn't say a slave, I didn't say a servant, I said a help. Women were put here to help their husbands. My wife helps me. My wife helps me not doing what I can do. She helps me doing what I couldn't do if there were no women on earth. Example. I don't do laundry. That is not my thing. I don't do laundry. I did laundry. I did laundry for 2 years. Those are the 2 years that I was in Bible college prior to getting married. Here's what would happen. Now, I would go down to school. I'd be there for 9 months. And for those 9 months, I did my laundry. Now, when I did my laundry, down at the laundromat, the washer was 20 cents, the dryer was 10 cents. I did all my laundry for 30 cents. Now, every time I say that, women go, and men go, yeah. Men don't understand. They don't see anything wrong with that. And all the women go. And I made that statement, and I love it, guys. I'm telling you. Because right after the service, this poor, unsuspecting woman, there's always one in the crowd. They'll come up. I don't know, they come up and go, how did you do that? I said, put all in her. The colors and the whites. I said, my laundry was Martin Luther King approved. Completely integrated. I said, all I needed was a tamper. I put it all in there. I said, when I got done packing it in, then I put in some soap. Say, did you measure it? No, I measured how far the suds got from the machine when it was running. And if the suds came out of the top of that washer, came all the way across, down the front, and made it all the way across the floor to the dryer, I knew my clothes were clean. I might be a little chafed that week, but I knew my clothes were clean. When I got done washing my clothes, I took them all out of the washer, I put them in a dryer, I put in a dime, and I set it on nuclear. You couldn't touch my clothes for 3 days. I used tongs to get my clothes out of that dryer, but there were no germs on my clothes. Oh, no, 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 no. The heat had not killed them. No self-respecting germ would be seen on my clothes. I made that statement. Poor sick woman. Sick woman came up to me after church. She went, my, you must have had a lot of ironing to do. I said, ma'am, I said, there was no iron in my house. You guys may not know this. You really do have somebody famous preaching to you. I am the inventor of wash and wear. Because everything that wasn't wash and wear, when I buy it, it becomes wash and wear. I just never did laundry. On my clothes, I must look like I slept in them. I don't know. There was an old Southern lady one time after I'd been doing my laundry. She came up to me and she says, "Brother Gibb, would you mind if I did your laundry?" I said, "Ma'am, you are led of God." I did this a while back. I had to leave my wife in Ohio, and I went off on a meeting by myself. My mother-in-law was sick, and my wife was there. I led her back there to nurse her back to health. I don't know why I did that. But anyway, I was staying in this missionary apartment. Brand new, I mean, it was brand new. Brand new washer, brand new dryer. Now, you ever hear us preachers say this? "I'm not preaching now. I'm telling you the truth." Okay? Everything I told you about my laundry is true. But that was 30 years ago. And I said, you know what? There's a washer. There's a dryer. I got dirty laundry. I can take a gun apart and put it back together. I can do laundry. So I went down to the washing machine. I put my laundry in the machine, and I could have done it. I could have done it, but somebody had sabotaged the washing machine. They put two knobs on it. One of them said, "Hot, hot, hot, cold, warm, cool, cold, cold." I said, "Good night, we're talking about Christians." The other one said 10, 2, and 4. I said, "We're talking about Christians while we're drinking a Dr. Pepper." I took it all back out of the washer, put it in a basket, took it to the preacher and said, "Get some lady to do this laundry. I don't do laundry." I never made my bed. When I was in Bible college, I made my bed one time. I would come down from Ohio. I'd go down to Florida. I would get these sheets right out of the plastic bag, brand new. I would make my bed. That was the last time for 9 months till I went back to Ohio. I said that. Sick woman came up to me after church. She goes, "Well, didn't you make your bed when you washed your sheets?" I said, "You wash sheets." I said, I had those new kind of sheets, those don't wash kind. In fact, I called them chameleon sheets because over the 9 months they was on my bed, they went to several different colors. They started the school year white and crisp and clean. And by 9 months later, man, they were kind of a dingy gray with a big oily spot right there in the center with a green fringe around it. Tell you what I didn't do, buddy. I didn't jump in bed toward the end of school year because you just hit it like a flat stone on a smooth lake and bounce off the wall. I never made that bed. Here's my philosophy. I'm getting out of that bed in the morning. I'm getting back in that bed tonight. And I'm not doing tours during the day. Only God and I know that bed hadn't been made. And after a while, I'm pretty sure God wouldn't even go in that room. You know what my wife does? My wife understands a washing machine. She understands that hot, 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 cold, cool, cold, cold. I don't know all that stuff, man. She understands that. She understands that 10-2-4 thing. She understands a dryer. She puts this thing in there that looks like a Kleenex when you put stuff in the dryer. I don't know what that is because I put a Kleenex in one there and caught fire. But she puts this Kleenex in there, and this stuff comes out soft and smelling good. When I put my clothes on, they smell good. You know what she is? She's a help to me. Boy, she is a help to me. You know what you ladies need to be? You need to be a help to your husband. You do. You really know how badly he needs the help. You need to be a help to your husband. I have, for the last 37 years, been flying around across country, across the state, across the world to go and preach. In the 37 years that I've been preaching, 35 years that we've been married, I have never purchased an airline ticket. Now, I've paid for every one of them. But I never bought an airline ticket. To this day, my wife should go on the internet before it's calling them up and making the arrangement. My wife goes on the internet. She gets all this stuff done. You say, "Oh, you're too lazy." Nah. I don't even know where I am when I'm there. You are looking. This is the truth. You are looking at a guy. I can't find socks in a suitcase. I have been in a motel room and called my wife and said, "Babe, where are the socks?" Now, I'm not demanding, like, "Did you hide them?" She'll say, "Well, did you look in the suitcase?" I said, "Well, I called them and they didn't answer." Sometimes we'll be in a motel and I'm looking through the suitcase. I'll say, "Kathy, where are the socks?" And she'll walk over like this. "They're probably right here. I can't find them." Okay? She is a help to me. My wife is a help to me. Next week, I will be 57 years old. That's the third time. But I'll be 57 years old. I flunked several times. But I never made coffee until I was 52 years old. I'm not talking about go to the motel and get that little thing you put in there. I can do that. I'm talking about take the lid off a coffee can and put some coffee in a machine to make a cup of coffee. I didn't do that. I was at a place, they put me up someplace and gave me this much coffee, and I thought I was supposed to use it during the week. And so I didn't do it until I was 52 years old. I just couldn't do it. This happened. We were in western Pennsylvania for a meeting about 100 miles from where we're from. And there, my wife had to take care of some family business back in Ohio, and she said, I've got to go back to Ohio for 3 days. You know what my wife did before she left? She took 3 coffee filters, put coffee in them for 3 days, so that every morning all I had to do was take the coffee filter and put it in the coffee machine, coffee maker, and have coffee. That's a help. But I was glad she came back after 3 days, because them coffee filters started to jam up in there. If it had been a week, we'd have lost that coffee maker. I know. Say, what if she's a help? I will testify to every one of you, my wife is a help to her husband. She is a blessing. I joke, you know, as a preacher, I joke about having 7 sermons. This is the standard piece of paper that I use for my sermons. And as much I joke about 7, this is actually number 1197. And I put these in a notebook. And at the front of that notebook are yellow sheets that look something like this, except they have 44 lines on the front, 44 lines on the back. They're at the front of my sermon notebook. And what they are is they're an index of everything that I've preached starting from the first entry. It's not from the first time I preached. I've been preaching for about 3 years when I put the first entry in. But the first entry in my sermon notebook on the index is March of 1973. That starts with sermon number 1 and it goes on to 1,300 of them. In the front of my sermon notebook, I have 184 of those that I've filled up. And a while back, I had one left. I had one unused sheet left. Now, guys, look, I was working on a book 5 minutes before I walked in this door. When I get done, I'll go back out there, I'll turn on my computer, and I will work on a book until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. I work, and I don't care what you think, and I don't care how it sounds, I work hard. I really do. I mean, I put it in. I pulled down 3 files from the internet today for some information, got about 4 little scraps of information, but it's helping me get a book done. And I don't have time to go run around with this one sheet of paper. I had to fly off to a meeting somewhere. When I came back, my wife handed me a stack of them like that. She'd taken that one last sheet, gone down to a quick print place, and gone and print me about 100 or 200 sheets. You know what that is, ladies? That's a help. You know what's wrong with some of you women? You know why you're not happy? Because that little liberated spirit that comes from hell got inside you, and you know what you say? Well, I'm not helping him. I'm no slave. That's right, and you're not happy either. You won't be happy until you help your husband. I'll tell you what else a woman was made to do. Take a look at Titus chapter 2. Titus chapter 2. Look at the interesting wording of this verse. It tells us this about women, verse 4, that they may teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children. A woman was made to love her husband. But did you notice how God worded that verse? God didn't say women love husbands. It says they have to be taught. Do you know why a woman has to be taught to love her husband? Well, when they get married, no, I'm not doubting that she loves him the day they get married. But here's the problem. Women are romantic. Did you know that? And so women got this idea that I'm going to marry this guy. He's a white knight, right in here on a white horse, scoop me up off the ground, and we're going to ride off into the sunset and live happily ever after in a castle that he's going to build after he slays a few dragons. That's how the marriage starts. But 6 months after they're married, you know what she discovers? She married a man. This is a horrible revelation for a woman. She finds out that this guy is a man. This really happened. We have not had a house for 20 years. We have been in trailers. And one morning, my wife came out of our bedroom, and there on the kitchen table were my dirty socks. And my wife, honest, my wife never is a nag. She does not demand things of me. But she was asking. She was curious. And she said, why were your socks on the kitchen table? And I said, well, that's where I was standing when I took them off last night. Now, I'm sorry, that makes complete sense to me. And before you ladies go, you're a horrible man, wait a minute. She didn't have to bend over to pick them up. You got to be considerate. Put them on the floor. She had to go all the way down there to get them. I'll put them right there. I should just scoop them right up. Some of you ought to say, thank you right there. You know what happens? This young girl marries this Prince Charming, and after about 6 months, she discovers this guy is a man. And she's having coffee with the lady across the street who's been married for 25 years. And she says something like this, do you know what he did? You aren't going to believe this. You know what he did? And then she'll tell him this ghastly thing that her Prince Charming did. And you know what the lady who's been married 25 years will do? She'll go, Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's how they are, honey. That's just men. We just got to love them. Could I tell you, ladies, something? On behalf of all men, thanks for loving us. Really, I know that we are, you know, of this relationship that my wife and I have, I got the easy part. I have to love her. She is easy to love. My wife has heard this for over 34 years. How do you put up with him? If we had a dollar every time somebody said to her, how do you put up with him? That motorhome would be paid for. I feel sorry for my wife. You know why? Because she's married to me. But here's the thing. A woman was made to love her husband. And maybe some of you women are not happy because you are not loving your husband. Can I give you a test? There was a day when women used to do the decor in the house. I'm all for that, okay? I'm not interested in porcelain birdies and all this other junk, okay? Men would live in a tar paper shack. We don't care. So, I hear women say this, well, it's my nest. But I used to think that meant bird, not pack rat. But here's what happened. A woman used to do the decor in her house and fix it all up. You know what she said? Oh, I hope my husband and my children like this. And she would fix up the house and she'd say, honey, how do you like this? You know, women don't ask their husbands that anymore. Because women no longer take care of their house and use the do the decor in their house for their husband. They now do it for another woman. They now want a house that looks like a picture out of Country Living magazine. And now you fix up your house and then you got to call your girl, some woman, you know, and say, oh, you ought to see what I did in the living room. Come on over. You're not doing it for your husband. You're fixing it up so that somebody else can say your house looks nice. And my goodness, man, this poor guy sits down and he touches something on the end table and you go, don't touch that! You know why? You complain. You complain that your husband sits on the end of the couch and does nothing but hold the remote and watch football. You know why that is? That's all he's allowed to touch. You have taken this wild beast and put him in a museum where everything is Velcroed into place. I was in a house one time, and there in the corner, were a bunch of gift boxes. Beautiful paper, beautiful ribbon. I said, oh, somebody's having a birthday. The lady went, no. Somebody's having an anniversary. No. What's in the boxes? Oh, nothing. Must be my birthday. That's what my folks always gave me, except not as nice a box. She saw it in Country Living magazine. And I wouldn't doubt that there's some other lady that she knows that's got nicer boxes than hers, and she's been competing with her. You know what's wrong with you, lady? You don't love your husband. You're not happy because you don't love your husband. Look, don't come and tell me all the problems that you've got with him. My wife, look, I don't care how bad your husband is. Talk to my wife. You've got it easy. You don't have me. My wife loves me. She's a good lady. Verse 4, look what it says also. It says that they may teach the young women. You know what older ladies need to do? They need to teach young women. We have raised a generation of young girls in this country now through public education and the internet and movies and everything else that when they say, I need to find out how to cook supper, what they mean is, how long do I put it in the microwave? You know, if there are girls out there, they don't know that they can take things in the kitchen and put them all in a bowl, throw a few eggs and some milk, and come out with a cake. If it doesn't come in a cardboard box, just add water, they can't do it. You know what those girls need, ladies? They need you to teach them how to be ladies. They need you to teach them how a lady is supposed to look. Our boys are grown up and gone, but it was a phenomenon. I used to be tickled. When my boys, of course, you know, there were like from the first one, there were 4 years between the first and the second one, and 5 years between the second and third one. So for a number of years, we had a teenager. And it was so funny because no matter where we sat in church, we always happened to sit behind where all the teenage girls in church decided to sit. And we could change every night. We'd go a different place and all the teenage girls would sit right in front of my boys. And I remember this one girl. Now, I'm getting this down, ladies. I'm getting this down. Young women have two hairdos. There's the potato chip clip. I hate the potato chip clip. I like potato chips, and I know what the clip is for. But the potato chip clip is this. You take this hair, and you go... Pfft. Then you grab the clip off the potato chips and go... Pfft. And if this comes off, someone's going to lose an eye. But I understand the potato chip clip. I'm getting this down. I really am. I'm trying to become more educated, more you know... I won't say I have a feminine side. My feminine side divorced me years ago. But I understand why you do that, because tomorrow when you want to do a different hairdo... You use a different color potato chip clip. I figured out, I'm watching this lady, and every night, her potato chip clip changed colors. No difference in anything. But one night it was blue, and the next night it was brown, and the next night it was pink, and I thought, my, must be a lot of work involved in that. I think the potato chip bag is probably jealous. And then there's the second hairdo, young girls, and that is... And I'm getting this one down. It is what I call stick your head out of the car on the way to church and then spray it in place. But I figured out that one is broken down into mile marker increments. 30 mile an hour, 40 mile an hour, 50 mile. I've seen the 70 mile an hour. And we were in this church, and every night this one girl sat down in front of my son John. And you could tell that she was trying to get his attention. She had a 70-mile-an-hour job. She had her best sweatshirt on. She had the best blue jeans she had, the ones with the holes in the knees. And she'd plop herself down right in front of my son and keep kind of glancing back. And I wanted to, honest, I didn't do it. But I wanted to tap her on the shoulder and say, honey, if you're trying to get this boy's attention, you better tape $20 bills all over your body, because ain't nothing about you going to turn his head. You know why? Because he comes from a house where there's a lady. Hey, ladies, these young girls need to be taught how to be a lady. They need to be taught that a guy is not excited about a girl that can beat him arm wrestling, or that can outrun him, or that can outcuss him. They need to be taught how to be ladies. They need to be taught what clean is. I remember my mom. Listen, I remember my mom had a long-handled sponge, and I can still see my mom washing the ceilings in our house. Every kid needs to grow up with two smells. Every kid. You know what they are? Food and clean. You know what just flips a kid's switch to be coming home from church or coming home from school and be about 20 feet from the house and smell supper cooking? But there's just nothing like it. Our house, when I was raised, our house smelled like food. My kids, our house smelled like food. We have trailers, but they all smelled like food. We love. People say, what do you miss the most? You know what I miss the most? I miss my wife's cooking. Because we're always somebody's house for cooking for supper. Or we're always going out for supper. And next week, we'll finish up here Sunday, and we've got about a week between the next meeting. You know what I'm excited about? My wife cooking. And she's going, yeah, I'm going to cook. No, I'm telling you, she loves to cook. She absolutely loves to cook. And she never had to learn. I mean, she's never made a bad meal. She hasn't. You can see that. But, and clean. Man, my mom, she used to wash everything. You know what I think? I think you women, I think you are soft. I think you are compassionate. I think you are kind where we men are not. Until you get a wash rag in your hand and wash the face of a child. Something happens to you. You should have a 5-day waiting period before a mother can buy a washcloth. My wife is a great lady, but my mom did this. All women do this. They take this wet washcloth, they come over to this kid, and they try to unscrew his face. Kids going, oh, you're cleaner now. Here's your nose. Here's your upper lip. I don't know what it is, ladies. I mean, you put a gun in a man's hand, he goes, you put a washcloth in a woman's hand, he goes, There's something there. There's something there. You're probably going to hear next time. The next one's going to be, did you hear about what happened to the public school? A woman went in there with a washcloth. She unscrewed 18 faces. By that time, it dried out and she was empty. We have done this. We'll go over somebody's house. We'll be at a church and we'll be over somebody's house and they'll say, they'll give us a tour of the house. And we'll walk past the teenage girl's bedroom. And I will look in and I will think, call 911. Because somebody broke in last night and looked for the gold bullion. The bed isn't made, just like mine wasn't made. Piles of laundry in the middle of the floor. Drawers opened up with things hanging out. This girl doesn't do any better than I did. Hey, ladies, come on. Don't sit there and say, well, if you know, we shouldn't. No, no, we need you to. And we need the old ladies to teach you how to do that. They need to understand what clean is. We have done this. We'd have a meeting like tonight. We'd finish up on a Friday night and have 600 miles, maybe 700 miles between here and the next meeting. I would be preaching to you on Friday night as I spoke before we came into the service. I would hook my trailer. We had a trailer then hook up to our van. And we would be pointed out. I would not cut the sermon short. I would not cut fellowship short after the church. But after service, after everything was done, and then we'd load up our books, we'd jump in that truck, and we'd have to knock out 250 to 300 miles that day, that night. And we would drive until 1:30 or 2:30 in the morning. I would pull that rig into a truck stop between two idling 18-wheelers about 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning. I would scoop up my three sleeping sons. I would carry them one by one back into that trailer to their little bedroom. I'd slip them in their bed. And when I put them in their bed, you know what they smelled? Clean. They put their face to that pillow. You know what they smelled? They smelled clean. Mom, kids need to smell food, and they need to smell clean. Kids need to smell Pine Sol and Murphy's Oil soap. You understand? They need that. And the young girls need to be taught how to be young women. They need that. They need to be taught how to sit. They need to be taught how to dress. They need to be taught that guys are not impressed with their new tattoo. They need to understand that a guy doesn't want to see a ring in her nose. It belongs in the nose of a pig. Get it? And they need the older ladies to teach them that. And I'm done with the ladies. Now, kids, you're going to love me. You're going to love me. Go to Ephesians chapter 6. Don't worry, I'll be done about another hour and a half. Ephesians chapter 6. And I will tell you what kids were made to do. Kids were made to play. They weren't made to work. Men were made to work. Kids were made to play. That's what kids want to do. I am always bothered when I see kids asked social questions. You know, you get this kid, you know, hey, what are an eighth grader. Are you concerned about global warming? Yeah, I'm concerned about global warming. You don't even know what global warming is. You know what I don't like to see? I don't like to see the pro-abortion, anti-abortion factions facing each other across the street. And on the pro-abortion side, some little 9-year-old kid holding a sign that says, keep abortion free and legal. That kid shouldn't be there. He ought to be playing. Well, wait a minute. On the other side of the street, I don't like to see the 9-year-old holding a sign over there that says, stop abortion now. Let the parents beat each other to death with those signs. Those kids need to go down to the creek and build a hydroelectric plant. They need to go into the woods and shoot some Indians. You're still allowed to do that. If not, Iraqis, newsmen, Democrats. Anyway, you know what kids need to do? Kids need to play. That's what they were made to do. I'm not a horse person, okay? I don't understand much about horses, never had a horse. But I do understand this much about horses. Don't take I said colt one time, and a horse guy had to come up and explain that the male is a colt and the female is a foal. Shut up. I don't even care. Baby horse. Midget. And I know this. If you take that baby horse and you put a load on its back like an adult should carry, its back is too soft, and that horse will grow up swayback. I only ever saw one swayback horse in my life. Ugly animal. Deformed. its back from its rear shanks went like it dropped about this much. It went like this. You know what they tell me? Now that its back is like that, it is ruined and it can't carry any load. You know what we're doing to our children in this country? And the news media is the worst. The news, they'll get these kids and they'll ask them, are you worried about the war in Iraq? Yeah, I'm worried about the war in Iraq. You worried about us running out of oil? I'm worried about running out of oil. He isn't worried about that. He wants to go out and play. Kids are made to play. I saw this. You guys know what PETA is? You know, people eating tasty animals. And I saw this. And PETA, one day they decided they were going to abuse children. So they dressed up one of these PETA idiots like a giant carrot. I never thought I'd see the day that I was praying for a giant rabbit. But anyway, they dressed this idiot up like a giant carrot. Now listen to me. I didn't do this. PETA decided they were going to abuse black elementary school kids in Los Angeles. Because they went down to a black elementary school, stationed this carrot idiot outside the school with a sign that said this: eat your veggies, not your friends. Can I explain something? When I eat a steak, total stranger, I have never carried on a long-term friendship with a cow. I talked to this guy from India one time. I said, why don't you eat meat? He says, because it may be my grandmother reincarnated. She may come back as a cow. I said, your grandmother did come back as a cow in Ohio. And we already ate her. Just go ahead, man, eat that cow. It's probably my grandmother. Get even. If it's real tough, I know it's my grandmother. And so they stationed this idiot outside this black elementary school with a sign that says, eat your veggies, not your friends. And then CNN, one of the greatest child abusers in the country, grabbed three little black kids, put them on nationwide TV, and tried to elicit a pro-vegetarian statement from them. They got this first little kid here, put him on nationwide TV. They said, what's your favorite food? He said, chicken. Man, I mean, you talk about shepherd's hook. Boy, they drug that kid off. They still haven't found him. He's with Jimmy Hoffa now. Next, they had this. I'm telling you, they had this precious little black girl. There she is in her little dress, little pigtails, and she's on nationwide TV, and they said, what's your favorite food? She said, hamburger. She's gone with the other kid. Now, they only got one kid left, and they've got to get what they want out of him. So instead of asking him what his favorite food is, they know he's going to mess that up. So they asked him this. You ought to see him. I love this kid. I'm going to follow this kid through life, and when he gets old enough, I am going to vote him into the White House. He is sitting on nationwide TV like this. And they didn't ask him what his favorite food is, because they, you know, it's some dead animal. He's a man. So they said this: do you like vegetables? He goes, uh-huh. And what's your favorite vegetable? Chicken. That's my favorite vegetable. You know what those kids should have been doing? Should have been playing. You kids, you're made to play. Now, can I give you kids one thing? Now, look, come on. No matter what you play, it's got to be rules. There's only one rule to playing. Come on, one. You can't get less than one or it's nothing. You got to have one. That one rule is found in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 1, where it says this: children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. I know what your kids just said. I knew it. Don't you understand my parents are dedicated to my unhappiness? I know what's wrong with all parents. There are three things wrong with all parents in this room. You know what they are? Ask any teenager. My parents don't understand me, they don't want me to have any fun, and they don't want me to have any friends. That is the complaint of all kids. Let me explain this to you kids. Someday you're going to grow up. Then you're going to, now get this order right, get married. Then after the appropriate time, have a child. You're going to walk down to the nursery. You're going to look at your baby. Now your baby will be easy to find. While all the others are spitting up on themselves, crying and doing other gross things, your kid will be propped up in his bassinet with his laptop writing his first book, My Life in the Nursery. You're going to look at your baby in that nursery as you stand at a hospital, and it's going to cry. When that helpless child's cry reaches your now motherly ears, something is going to take place in your body. That gland inside you that makes you want to understand them and makes you want them to have fun and makes you want them to have friends, it is going to begin to shrivel. It's not a fast process. It takes about 13 years. But by the time that baby is a 13-year-old teenager, you know what they're going to say about you? They don't understand me. They don't want me to have any fun. And they don't want me to have any friends. Can I explain to you kids something? This is not an authority issue. It's a safety issue. You know why God put parents over you? Because at a young age, you will make decisions that can destroy your life. There was a day in this country when men turned 21, 22, 23, and they became hitmen and murderers, ended up in prison, and now they're doing it at ages 8 and 9 and 10. Your parents will intercept you before you make a decision that you will pay for the rest of your life. You may not know this, people. I got engaged when I was in the first grade. I did. I got it. And say, why? That's when I discovered girls. Up to that point, I was happy playing marbles with the guys. Then I went to school. When I got to school, there were girls. And I saw girls and I said, whoa, and I've been playing marbles. I don't even know to this day where I found the ring, but I found this ring. And there was this beautiful little first grade girl in my class. I gave her that ring and I was convinced we were now engaged to be married. Now, I must confess, my parents kind of put a kibosh on that relationship. Had I had my way, I'm telling you the truth, I would have been married by the second grade. Probably divorced by the third. But my parents intercepted me and kept me from making a major mistake. I'll explain it this way. When I was growing up, I had a friend of mine. Man, I don't know what you got in your backyard, but you know what this guy had across the alleyway in his backyard? He had his backyard in the alleyway. You know what was on the other side? A junkyard. Now, for all you who don't know what a junkyard is, that's where you played before there was Disney World. Okay? I mean, a junkyard is a great place to play. As long as you can outrun the dog, you're going to have fun. If you can't outrun the dog, your friends are going to have fun. And my friend had this junkyard in his backyard. My parents were going away one night. They took me and my brother. My brother was 2 years older than me. I was 9. He was 11. My friend was 10. And they dropped me off at my friend's house, dropped us off, and they said, here's what they said before they left. Don't play in the junkyard. See? Afraid we might have fun. The car wasn't even out of sight, and we were in the junkyard. On the bottom of a pile of junk carcass car bodies, down in the bottom was an old junk car. We shinnied our way into that. You know what that was? It looked like an old junk car. It wasn't at all. It was a submarine. And you were looking at a guy at 9 years old. I sailed the seven seas. And that afternoon, my brother and I and my friend, we went out on the Atlantic, on the Pacific, on oceans unknown to man, and we sunk every leftover Japanese and German ship on the seas. We may have took down a few friendlies. I don't know. We just sunk everything out there, okay? When we got done, we climbed up to the top. It was about 10 or 11 feet up on top of this pile of cars. Was an old truck body, a cab, and it was aimed up like this. We climbed up in that. That was our spaceship. You know what NASA's mission? NASA's mission, they don't tell you this, but NASA's mission is to find out if there's intelligent life in outer space. My mission is to find out if there's intelligent life at NASA. I can tell you, if you know anybody that works at NASA, give them a call on my benefit. And tell them there is no life out there. You know why? Because when I was 9 years old, I went where no 9-year-old had gone before, and all life in outer space, we hunted down and we killed it. I don't care if it was big and furry. I don't care if it was small. We destroyed it all. That's why they're not finding anything. I've already killed it. Killed it when I was 9 years old. So, you know, when you have sailed the seven seas, sunk everything on the surface, then sailed to the far reaches of the universe, killed everything alive, you're kind of tired. We got done. My friend climbed down. My brother climbed down. I'm standing here, 10 feet down. My brother said, come on, climb down, let's go. I said, I don't know. I got a little bit of a lazy streak. I said, I think I can jump. Now, jumping is really easy. My part of this is I jump, and then gravity takes over. I have never jumped and gone up. Gravity has always worked like a charm. And I said, "Now I think I can jump. I just was too lazy to climb down." My brother then used the magic words that predestinated that I would jump. He said, "You better not jump or you'll get in trouble." That's all I needed. I jumped. Gravity took over. Gravity worked fine. I didn't do my part of this equation too well. I didn't jump out far enough. And I came down on the sharp edges of raw steel. And when I got up, 9 years old, when I got up, I was bleeding from where that scar is right there. And I was bleeding from that scar right there. And this one right here, the meat was hanging out. Can I tell you kids something? My parents didn't say don't play in the junkyard because they didn't want me to have fun. They said don't play in the junkyard because they didn't want me to have these. And you know what you young people don't know? Every one of these parents has these. They may be on the outside or they may be on the inside. But every one of your parents has been through something in life where they learned the hard way and they came up with a scar. You know what they said? I don't want you to have these. So obey your parents in the Lord. And if you're not happy, it's not because you're not playing. It's because you're not obeying your parents in the Lord. One last one, and I will be done. Look at Revelation. I mentioned this earlier. I like this verse, Revelation chapter 4. I like the whole fourth chapter of Revelation, but I'll not read it to you. But this last verse says this, "Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for Thou hast created all things, and for Thy pleasure they are and were created." You know why some of you are not happy? Because you are not fulfilling your purpose for being on this earth. Your purpose for being on this earth is to put a smile on the face of your Creator. You know one thing man is consistent about? Man is consistent about always being 180 degrees wrong. We aren't, this is right and we're off by 5 degrees. We're always off by 180. I'll give you an example. Read the book of Jonah. You read that first chapter and here's Jonah says, "God wants you to throw me overboard." You know what the captain said? He didn't say throw him overboard. You know what the captain said? When he found out what God wanted, here's what he said. He said, "Row harder." He told the crew, the crewman, "Row harder." When he knew what God wanted, he did what he wanted. Then he finally gave up and threw Jonah overboard. Every time God says this, man goes this direction. You know what you think? Even you saved folks, you know what you think? You think God exists to put a smile on your face. That is 180 degrees wrong. You exist to put a smile on His face. Some of you, you start every day. You know how you start every day in prayer? Look, you may not say it exactly. You may not have thought about it, but if you would listen to what you say, you start every day like this. "God, here's what you can do today to put a smile on my face. Get me to work on time. Give me a parking spot close to the door because it's raining today. Tell my wife that I'm right. Get my boss off my back. Would you get me a raise?" You know, if you would do those things, you'd sure put a smile on my face. People, He does not exist to see to it that we have a pleasurable existence. We exist to see to it that He has one. You know why some of you aren't happy? Because every morning of your life, you wake up and you say, "What can I do today to make myself happy?" And as long as you're trying that, you will never succeed. But if you can pillow your head, every night you can pillow your head and say, "I know today I did something that made Him happy." You'll be happy. For some of you, that'd be no more than going home tonight and burning some CDs of music, throwing away what you've been reading, changing your jokes or changing your language when you get angry, whatever the case may be. But for some of you, you could pillow your head even tonight, having made Him happy. And if you put a smile on His face tonight, I'm telling you, you will lay in your bed. I don't care if you're sick. I don't care if you're angry. I don't care if you're hurt. You'll lay in bed and say, "I am happy." I'd like you to stand with your heads bowed. Your heads bowed, your eyes closed. I know you want to be happy. And I know you claim to be different than the rest of the world, and yet what the world is trying to be happy, doing to be happy, that's what some of you are doing. You know what some of you men need to do? You need to explore something. You need to build something. You need to conquer something. You need to work. And you need to love your wife. You ladies, you need to be a help to that man. Nobody knows how badly he needs your help like you do. You need to love him. You need to teach young women how to be ladies. You kids, play. I mean, just play. Go down to the creek and sink the submarines and the boats and everything else, but obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right, and you'll be happy. And all of us, you know how we need to start our day? Instead of saying to God, God, here's what you can do to put a smile on my face, say this, God, what could I do today to put a smile on your face? And I'll say it again, if you can pillow your head at night, knowing today I did something that made him smile, gave him pleasure, you will be happy. Father, we're just dirt. You designed us. You made us. You gave us life. You made us a soul. You saved us. You made us part of your family. You made every person in this room. You put us here to put a smile on your face. God, there are some men here who are not happy. There are some ladies here who are not happy. There are some kids here who are not happy. Now they understand why. There are some Christians here, God, they're not happy because they've been trying to be happy instead of trying to make you happy. I pray tonight, God, I pray tonight before we all leave this building, there'll be some people make some decisions to do what they were put here to do so that they can be happy the rest of their lives. They won't need money. They won't need wealth. They won't need fame. They just need to do what you made them to do, and they'll be happy. In Jesus Christ's name I pray, amen. With your heads bowed and eyes closed as the instruments play, if you need to come and talk to the Lord, why don't you come just before we leave? Why don't you just come to the Lord and talk with Him a little bit? You know what some of you men need to do? You need to take your wife by the hand and say, let's go out to eat tonight. Or when this meeting's over, next week, let's go out to eat some night. Let's go out on a date like we used to date before we got married. You know what some of you men need to do? Some of you ladies, you need to look each other in the eye and say, I will love you all of my life. Now, you know they're not going to be perfect, and you know they're going to make you cry, and you know they're going to hurt your feelings, but you need to say, I will love you till death do us part. Folks have come. If you need to come, you come while you can.